Accession number 27801, Mrs. Margaret Lees, reel 5. Now, before we go on, you've been thinking about the bomb that you worked on while you were at Bletchley Park in 42 and a bit into 43. And it's come to mind a lot more how the thing worked and what you did on it. So if you'd like to tell us a bit more about that, that would be very helpful.
Well, it certainly has come to mind a bit more. You asked for a description of the bomb. Well, let's start from... We used to go to work in coaches, and of course we had passes to get into this incredibly secret place, which was Bletchley Park, and then we went to our own huts. We didn't go anywhere else. The huts were oblong, concrete floors. I think it was strip lighting, which was not known very much in those days. And down each side, I think in the middle, there was a partition, very long hut. There was a partition which was an office for a senior rating, I think. There were no windows, or if there were, they were blocked up. Certainly nobody could look in. Now, down each side were these bombs. They were large metal rectangular erections. I couldn't see over them, so I suppose they were about 6 feet, 6.5 feet tall, about 10 to 12 feet long, and about 1.5, 2 feet thick. They stood at a roughly right angle to the wall, so they were parked. On the back of them was very complicated wiring, and on the front, there were... they were spikes, well, not exactly, not sharp spikes, but they were sticking out. Now, I think there were three rows of these, and I think there must have been 26, one for each letter of the alphabet in each row. I think there must have been. Onto these used to fit, can't think what they're called, drums, which you could just hold in your hand. They were that sort of size. Now, around the face of the drum were the letters of the alphabet, and on the back of the drum were electrical contact brushes, which made contact with some metal discs which were on the bomb around each spike. We'll call it a spike, it wasn't sharp. Now, we were given a menu, and sometimes some of the wiring at the back of the bomb had to be adjusted, but each of these drums had to be placed on its protuberance according to the menu. So it took quite a long time, and as you did it, you checked on all these brushes to make sure they were going to make contact. When it was all set up, we started the machine. Now, they made quite a noise. It was like being in an engine room. Eventually, the thing would stop. Now, how we read off what we were supposed to read, I really can't remember. But we used to read off from some master drums or something, and then we'd phone it through to the hut where the brains all were. And then we had to do an awful lot of checking to make sure one of these brushes had not come awry. So there was continual checking going on. And that's really all I remember about how they worked, which is a bit vague, but it's a bit better than when I talked about it earlier.
That's very good. Okay. Well, the other thing you wanted to mention, which I think actually we will deal with now because we're tidying up, is the evacuees that you got in, I presume, 1939-40.
Yes.
That's in when you were living in Weld. Was it 39 or 40?
September 39, a few days after war broke out.
Now, tell me about how many evacuees did you get into your house?
Well, we had two evacuees. My sister was at home on having a holiday with us, and she was a nurse in London, and she said that we knew we were having children from the East End of London, and she adored all children, said they'd be lovely, but they'd probably be lousy. So, and they wouldn't like what we were going to have for our meal that evening. We were going to have roast chicken. And she said, no, they'd like scrambled egg. So the maid, we had a maid in those days, she, poor little thing, had to put up with the lice in the kitchen because we weren't going to have them in the dining room. Anyway, my father and my sister went down to the local school to collect these children, and my mother said she didn't want boys, she didn't really understand boys, she wanted girls. And eventually the car drove in, my mother and I were absolutely terrified, and we looked out and a little brown hand came out and opened the door, because we'd had a lovely summer and she was sunburnt, and they got out, these two pretty little girls, so they were friends, not sisters, Moira and Iris, and they were 8 and 9, I think, years old. They were each clutching a packet of biscuits and a little tiny suitcase each, and they came in and we loved them on sight. And I knew my mother was near tears, thinking about what their mother must have felt like. And these poor little souls, they'd been sent to another, they'd been sent to a village near here first. And they've told me subsequently they were very happy there for about 2 days. They were on a farm and they were having great fun. But I have discovered since that they thought that place used to flood and it was going to be too difficult with evacuees there, so they were sent on to us. But the poor little souls had to go to somebody else. Anyway, the moment we looked at them, we knew they were going to be one of the family, and they were. We absolutely loved them.
So, did you find that your preconceptions of the way they behaved or were wrong? Or?
Oh, they behaved beautifully, and they weren't lousy. And mind you, they were terrified of being lousy, but they weren't lousy. And, oh, they were lovely, lovely. And the whole school, the Isle of Dogs school, had come here. And the teachers as well. So my mother used to have the teachers round sometimes, certainly the headmistress, Miss Lukins, I think her name was. A wonderful woman. It's quite hard for the teachers also. And she sometimes used to have the parents of the children to stay, well, the mothers certainly.
Did you meet the mother of the mothers of these two girls?
Yes, absolutely. Oh yes, we knew the parents. One father worked at the Woolwich Arsenal, and sadly was killed in an accident just after the war finished. Wonderful people they were, and the other one, well, I don't quite know what he did, but that family eventually came here, and. Oh, that mother was a lovely woman, yes. It really was an eye-opener to us, because one didn't know people from the East End. And to find that they really were lovely people was good for us.
Now, we get back to the main part of your story now, which is where we left you, which is when you boarded the Christian Huygens at Durban.
Yes.
And we're on your way, we know not where at the moment, but and you talked about the send-off and the stewards who wouldn't accept tips. Anything else you remember about the voyage on the Christian
Yes, Orient? I do remember. They were very kind to us, and one of the things they organised was trips around the ship. So I went on one of these trips, and they took us down to the engine room. Now, that sounds all right in peacetime, but in wartime it's not quite so marvellous to go down to the engine room. But anyway, when we were in the engine room, one of the girls said, could we please see where the propeller went out into the sea? So, yes, they said, and they took us through. We had to coupe down and go through this sliding iron door, and when we were in this compartment, they closed the door. And then they told us that if the ship was hit by a torpedo, they were not allowed to open the door. Well, I would rather have died than say I was suffering claustrophobia, the only time in my life I've ever suffered from it. And then one of the girls who'd worked for an engineering firm in England found that the mechanism down there had been made by her firm, and she started a long conversation. I really don't remember much about it. I was just so frightened. So I was glad to come out of that. It was a very happy voyage in a way, but we did miss the Strathead. We did miss our friends there. And then we hoped they were going to call in a Mombasa and we could see them again. But then one day, suddenly, we did a great circle and we could see we were leaving a convoy. Now, it was then we began to think about all the landing craft that had been on the deck of the ship we'd left. And we knew, all the men we knew, were going to land somewhere, probably Italy. In fact, it was Sicily. And a particular friend I had had was shot right through the head. I think almost unfortunately his life was saved, because I did meet him after the war, and he was so changed, he might have been a different person. But anyway, we finished that voyage. We arrived in Mombasa.
Is that Kenya? I'm never quite sure.
Yes, it is.
All the names have changed, and I've forgotten
which
is which. Now, what were your first impressions of Kenya?
Well, the very first thing, I was thinking, I don't remember the actual landing or anything. All I remember, we thought by then we were God's gift to men. And I remember us waiting for some transport, and a man standing there said, "Oh my goodness, the place is lousy with wrens." So that wasn't very good. Anyway, we got to the camp, which was just outside the town of Mombasa.
Do you know its name? Or was it
just
Mombasa?
No,
camp?
I think it was just, I don't know if it had a name. And we found this really was, being in Africa, we felt. We were in long huts, which had, I don't know, some sort of leaves for the roof. And no windows. We had flaps we used to open. We had, it was dormitory accommodation. We had beds made, just a wooden frame with some sort of raffia stuff woven instead of a mattress, which used to creak all the time. They were very comfortable. Everybody had a mosquito net, which was tied up above the bed. Very, very strict rules about this, because if you were going out for the day or anything, you weren't going to be in before sundown. Those mosquito nets had to be lured and tucked in before we went, so we didn't take the mosquitoes to bed with us. There was a common room, a mess, and it was quite a big camp, and guard of some sort on the gate and regulating office. Now, of course, we went off. No, first of all, we didn't go into Mombasa to begin with. After having had to have very hasty baths and salt water, our one idea was to have a hot bath. So we rushed down to the washing place was separate from the rest. So we rushed down to the place we were going to have baths, and we ran the water, and we found that instead of being hot, it was cold water. There was no hot water on the camp at all. Eventually, we had a new MO, and the story was that he said that women had to have hot water. So then they built a large fire in the middle of the camp, on top of which was a cauldron of water. Now, it couldn't have been that dangerous, but I seem to remember it all looking like a witch's cauldron. We had a bucket, and we weren't allowed to get the boys to fill these buckets for us. We used to go along and fill the buckets. It took about three buckets to have enough water to have a bath in. And then we had to refill the cauldron with cold water. Anyway, we finally had our cold baths in rather murky-looking water, and we went off to look at the town. It was a lovely little town, and there were stalls around selling.
What was it like? I mean, because people can't imagine it now, really.
No, I expect it has altered now. It was a small town. I seem to remember only about two streets there, and there were small shops. There was a very nice cathedral. The whole atmosphere was African. There was a man walking up and down selling coffee, and he had a brass coffee pot, and two little china cups used to clink up and down. And the stalls, of course, people were haggling for fruit and everything. Masses of Africans around in their clothes they should wear, because they're lovely people and they look lovely and they should wear their own clothes, I think. I don't know much about the shops. We used to mostly buy from the stalls where we had to haggle, which we found great fun.
Now, one thing I should have asked is, when did you get there? You're sort of on the ship to... you seem to... Was
you're
it
asking
April 40?
Me for dates now, aren't
it's
you?
Only approximate. I think you're on the ship, the Strathyre, from February to March. I just wondered...
Yes, we were on the Strathyre, I think, for 3 weeks. Then we were 3 or 4 weeks. And then we were in Durban for 3 days. And then we went up to Mombasa.
So it's probably still March.
March or April, probably, yes.
Now, when did you start your duties, or were you ill first?
Because I yes. No, I was ill 3 times when we were there. But we must
upset tummy, wasn't it?
Yes, I expect we used to. I expect we started duties pretty soon. We worked at a place called Kilindini. Now, this really was boring work, and I don't really remember anything about this at all, except it was all fiddling with numbers in a book. This is the Japanese code. Thank goodness we only did that for 6 months. We were there for 6 months. And we worked in this old school building, which was built around a central courtyard.
And this was at Kilindini. Where's
Kilindini?
Is that near
well,
by?
It's a few miles away. We used to go by coach.
And I know you can't remember it, but as best you can, what were you doing with this Japanese code? I mean...
Don't remember there. I remember when we got on for... No, except we had figures. I don't think I understood what I was doing then, and we were certainly never told the result. I mean, I knew what I was told to do, but I didn't know to what end. Very dull. Very boring.
Just
you put that out of your
figures.
Mind. Something like that, yes, yes.
Now, what about your illness? It's always difficult to talk about this sort of thing, but how ill did you get, and what was the cause? The fruit, or what was it?
Well, I'm quite sure it was a surfeit of fruit, and you get jippy tummy in these places. But the first time that hit me, I woke up in the middle of the night feeling decidedly ill, and suddenly realised I had to get to the loo. Now, that was in a separate place from it, so I put on my dressing gown running as I went and got there. Now, this was a thunderbox, which, in other words, was a bucket over which was a wooden plank with a hole sawn in it for you to sit on. And, well, there were a lot of them, but thank goodness they were private. There were a few cubicles. But I got there just in time. But in the middle of the night, a lorry used to come round and they used to empty these buckets. And just as I sat down, thankfully, the trapdoor underneath me opened and the bucket was taken away. Now, that was the first time. And I was put into sick bay the next day, and the treatment was to put you on salts for a few days, I think, and then on kaolin, which blocks you solid, and then you're turned back into the camp again. You're better. Well, that happened to me 3 times in 6 months, so it's a bit weakening after a time. But sick bay was quite enjoyable because I had a proper loo, which was much appreciated. And they were doing some building. They were doing some road building, and I used to watch the men. They used to be in a straight line with their pickaxes, and they'd sing beautiful, beautiful. Beautiful voices they had. They used to sing and pickaxe in time to the songs they were singing. Absolutely lovely.
Now, so you were working on this work, well, in between being ill, which 3 times in 6 months means must have taken up a fair amount of time, being ill and then being not very well. And you're also working in this at Kilindini. Anything else happened while you were there?
Well, yes, we had entertainments, and the way one was entertained, one... lists used to go up in the regulating office. The such and such a mess are giving a party and they'd like 20 girls to come. So if you were interested, you put your name down on this list. And that's how you got to know people. Somehow I got to know a civilian. I can't remember how. She probably put a note up to say if anybody would like hot baths, she was offering them. And she had a little girl, and I dressed her doll, I remember. Very nice family.
Now, what were these parties like?
Dances. And in those days, we weren't jitterbugging. Everyone talks about the Americans and the jitterbugging. Well, that came into England just as we were leaving, and it certainly hadn't reached where I was. It was ballroom dancing.
And would it be a live band, or...?
Yes, I think so. Usually all these military and naval places had live bands, yes.
And what other record? Was there a cinema?
No, there wasn't a cinema. I don't think there was a cinema. There was. They used to occasionally erect a screen in the camp, outside, and we'd watch. And quite interesting, because the wind used to get it sometimes, and everyone would have a crinkled face. But I think the boys enjoyed that more than we did. I'm calling them boys because that's what we did. Of course, some of them were old men, the native servants. And we tried to learn some Swahili to the huge amusement of the boys.
Now, how did you do that? Did you have someone assigned to teach you?
No. We just used to try and pick it up.
Any success? It's not.
Oh, a little. We could ask for what we wanted. That's all. It's not a very complicated language. I did once get invited to an Indian household, which wasn't allowed. We weren't allowed to mix. I suppose the Wrens had their troubles and we were all started intermarrying or something. Our parents would have got worried because even if we'd been in a white country, they would have got worried, I suppose. But a friend of mine had a friend who was in the merchant service, and I have thought that he was probably doing a little fiddle on the side and selling things to this Indian. And she said, would I go out with her one evening, because he was bringing a friend. So we went out, and to our huge amazement, they took us off into the wooded part where there was a house, and this was an Indian household. And I'm terribly glad I went, because it was so interesting. The women waited on us and were terribly humble, which I was sad about. And we were given so much food. Of course, I was back in sick bay again afterwards, next day.
any other other recreational things you were doing?
I can't recall any.
Would you write home? There's some reference here to these aircraft. So.
Oh, yes, writing home. Oh, yes, that was awful because I didn't get any letters for ages. And I realised eventually the Wren officers have been worried about this. Well, I don't think it... I was worried. Yes, I was worried because we didn't know what was going on in England and everybody else was getting mail. And suddenly one day one of the Wren officers appeared. I was sitting on the bed talking to everybody and she appeared with her arms full of mail and she tipped it all onto my bed. And my mother had got the wrong address, so everybody who'd got the address from her, they'd been writing to the wrong address and all caught me. Now, we used to write home on airmail letters, and we'd have a large piece, probably about the size of A4. And we'd write on that, and then it was photographed and sent home, and when it arrived, it was a very small thing in a tiny little envelope. Or we could send quick messages home by sending a number. We had various things like happy birthday or I'm broke or things like that. And they had a number and you'd simply write this number, and I don't think I ever used that.
Now, what about the animals and fauna of Africa? I mean, insects, creepy crawlies, snakes.
Oh, yes.
Do you meet much of that?
Well, yes, one met it. I didn't come across snakes there. That was later in Ceylon. But there, of course, there must have been lots around. The noise in the evenings is quite amazing. I always thought, I've never heard anybody to agree with me, I always thought it would suddenly stop for a moment or two. And I always thought perhaps there was some danger around or something. What with bullfrogs and all the insects making a noise, it was really quite noisy. And one day we were all in our... We used to call these huts bandas, that's what they were called. One day we were all in our banda, and suddenly the ants did what they do here when they come out and they sprout wings and they fly all over the place. They're mating bonanza. And they filled the place. So we retired under our mosquito nets until they had finished. And there had been so many of them, and they were so big, that we had to get a broom and sweep up all the wings which they'd cast. on the floor. Absolutely amazing. And there was a huge moth that used to descend from somewhere up in the roof every now and again. I'd love to have measured it. It really was huge. Well, yes, mosquitoes, of course, were the main thing, but we used to wear a mosquito kit.
Now, can you go through all the mosquitoes? We've done the net, but what were there other mosquito precautions? You mentioned
yes.
The kit. What did you wear?
Our kit. In the evening, before it got dark, we had to put our mosquito kit on. Now, we wore dresses or skirts and blouses, white, and the mosquito kit consisted of sleeves, which you slipped on, and they had elastic at the top. So the sleeve of the dress came down over them. And gaiters, which covered us right up to above the skirt, right up to our thighs, which we kept up with suspenders. Actually, they were quite becoming. We did have difficulty with our clothes, though, because the dobie, I don't know what happened to him. But
yeah, just before we go on the dough, I will come to the dough. What about, did you actually have to take quinine or mepocrine?
No, we didn't, no. I'm not quite sure. Mepocrine was around just then. I came across it later when my husband was in Burma, but we didn't.
Okay, you were talking.
We'd had all these ghastly inoculations and things before we left England, and when we got there, we had to have another vaccination because one of the boys on the camp got vaccinated against smallpox. Mm.
Did some of those vaccinations can have a nasty effect? Did they have it?
Oh, they had. Yes, that was all in the past, though. And when we were vaccinated for the second time, of course, it didn't take. But it was a good precaution.
Now, what about the dobie and the washing around?
Yes, well, we used to send our white things to the dobie to be washed. And something happened about the lawn, or about the ironing. I don't know what it was, but we had no electricity. Yes, I think we had it for a short time in the evenings. And for some reason, he couldn't do it. He had great big steam irons, but we sometimes used to go out in unironed clothes. Not very often, but we did. Crushed cotton. But the dobie used to do the washing, yes.
Now, anything else about the sort of route? You weren't there that long.
No,
you were ill,
6 months.
On and off. You
that's
know.
Right, I was, yes.
Anything else you remember about your time there?
I remember we had a guard on the gate, and to begin with, he was an African guard, and he was very black, and he used to wear a black outfit. He had a black raincoat, huge great thing. Why a raincoat, I don't know, except that we discovered he was stealing from us, and a black hat. And we were more frightened of him than anything. I think eventually they put Marines on the gate instead. I don't think Marines were best pleased to just be guarding wrens. It isn't quite why they joined up.